Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm. As expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Raw Deal, and where I'm very pleased to have a special guest who will join us at the bottom of the hour, an expert on genetically modified food, Jeff Smith by name. Meanwhile, I have three stories to share with you, including a commentary on the Benjamin Fulford report I discussed in detail on Monday from a very wise man, and I think he's got it right. So while I found what Fulford was describing in terms of the content of the proposal highly plausible, here are several caveats. First off, the Russian Foreign Ministry would not tolerate a deal of this sort being made between the FSB and MI6, which is basically the same outfit as CIA and Mossad. The deal would also be a non-starter for any Russian nationalists, since Poland and Lithuania are NATO members. Abkhazia and South Osseta are already de facto parts of the Russian Federation. Odessa cannot be a free trade zone for Ukraine. That would be too much power for them. The only viable strategy for Russia is to wipe Ukraine off the map to serve as a warning to others who make similar attempts at ethnic cleansing of Russians. I think that's excellent. I think he's got it right. Meanwhile, some stories cross all the boundaries. You know, they're salacious enough for the tabloid, but important enough for mainstream, though I think by and large, you're not going to get much out of the mainstream on this one. It's just too hot. But Political Insider, which is a highly responsible source, writes, parallels emerge with death of Clinton chef Walter Scheib after Obama's personal chef is found dead. Yesterday, We reported that Tafari Campbell, who spent years working as sous chef in the White House before becoming Barack Obama's personal chef, had been found dead after drowning near the former president's estate in Martha's Vineyard. Now it's been revealed that the former White House chef of Bill and Hillary Clinton died under eerily similar circumstances. And here's a tweet from someone calling himself historian. Tafari Campbell, the personal chef of Obama's, was killed, just like Walter Shapp, chef during the Clinton and Bush administration. Campbell drowned under suspicious circumstances in only 8 feet of water, but was a seasoned swimmer. Shribe drowned too in 2015. Newsweek reported that Campbell, 45, went missing on Sunday while paddleboarding in Edgartown Great Pond, right by Barack and Michelle's $12.5 million Martha Vineyard home. A 911 call came in from the former president's mansion to report Campbell missing, and a massive search was launched that tragically culminated in the personal chef's body being found at around 10 a.m. Monday morning. Police said Campbell was paddleboarding with an unnamed other person, who said afterwards that the chef appeared to briefly struggle to stay on the surface and then submerged and did not resurface. It's since been reported that Campbell's cause of death was drowning. The fact that Campbell drowned is surprising given the fact that videos have surfaced on social media showing him confidently swimming laps in a pool of water, indicating he was a competent swimmer. Here you have proud Army brat tweeting. Video footage of athletic Tafari Campbell swimming in his 2019 Instagram account. He's the Obama chef who just drowned in an 8 foot of pond water where paddleboarding. I'm sure an investigation has already been scrubbed. It has since been revealed that Campbell's death has some eerie parallels with the passing of Walter Shribe, who was the executive chef at the White House during Bill Clinton's presidency in the 1990s. Shebb reportedly drowned in June of 2015 while he was out hiking in the Sangre del Cristo Mountains near Taos in New Mexico. Shribe, who was 61 at the time of his death, was reported missing by his girlfriend after embarked on what authorities believe was a fishing trip 3 days earlier. Police said Shry's body was found submerged in a mountain drainage flowing with surface runoff about 25 yards from the Yerba Canyon Trail, and it was hidden from view by dense vegetation and a steep rocky decline. In order to find Shreve's body, police had to use helicopters, dogs, and horses. They were quick to rule afterwards that did not appear that anyone else was involved in Shribe's death. In a 2006 interview, Shribe opened up about how much he enjoyed his time working in the White House under Clinton and then former President George W. Bush. "I loved working for the Bushes and the Clintons," he said at the time. "It's the greatest honor a chef can have to work for the first families." Here we got Sir Rickster tweeting. Tafari Campbell wasn't the first White House chef to drown. Walter Shribe, who served under President Bill Clinton and George W. Bush, left to go for a hike alone on the mountain trail in Taos, New Mexico. He was later reported missing by a family member and found drowned. Reports of Shribe's death have resurfaced in the wake of Campbell being found dead in a similar manner. It should be noted that the Obamas initially said that they were not home at the time that Campbell went missing. However, their office amended this Monday, claiming the Obamas actually were on Martha's Vineyard, just not at their own residence when Campbell drowned. Let me just make 3 points right off the bat here. The 911 call is only partially described here, but from other reports, the 911 call said that he was dressed all in black and that he had, you know, gone into the water and hadn't reemerged. Why is this an anonymous? Why aren't we being told who made that phone call? And why would he be dressed all in black? And I'm even curious as to why the caller would make that point. Number two, perhaps even more telling, why aren't we being told who the party was who was with him in paddle boating? And if he was with him, this was in only 8 feet of water, why couldn't he have saved him over and above the fact that this guy was actually a competent swimmer? I find this utterly baffling. We got two key figures in the whole event who are remaining anonymous and unidentified, one of whom is reporting how he was dressed all in black, went into the water, then didn't resurface, which implies visual observation. So they clearly were surveying the scene when this event happened. And how can it be the case that a competent swimmer is going to drown in 8 feet of water, especially if there's someone there who presumably could have come to his aid? Then I would add, this ambiguity about where the Obamas were is also disturbing. So where the hell were they? What's their alibi? Could it have been one of the Obamas who made the phone call, the anonymous phone call, the 911 call? Daily Mail reported that Mally and Sasha, the two presumptive daughters of the former president, they're actually the daughters of a physician who attended Michelle, who let them out, were spotted flying out of Martha's Vineyard Tuesday afternoon. The sisters appear to be in good spirits, smiling in photos at the airport, despite Campbell's body being found by their home just the day before. Here we have Foley Landon tweeting, Sasha and Molly Obama have been spotted flying out of Martha's Vineyard earlier today, one day after the drowning of Obama's personal chef on Obama's Martha Vineyard estate. While media reports on Obama's team have said Barack and Michelle were not on the property when the event occurred, and then it continues. Barack and Michelle issued a brief statement honoring Campbell after his body was found. Tafari was a beloved part of our family, Barack and Michelle said in a statement. When we first met him, he was a talented sous chief at the White House, creative and passionate about food and its ability to bring people together. In the years that followed, we got to know him as a warm, fun, extraordinarily kind person, made all of our lives a little brighter. That's why, when we were getting ready to leave the White House, we asked Tafari to stay with us, and he generously agreed. He's been part of our lives ever since, and our hearts are broken that he's gone. Here's Viola Bergman will not comply, tweeting, Tafari Campbell is the only person who has died inexplicably in Obama's orbit. Did you know that the woman who verified the authenticity of Obama's birth certificate, Loretta Fuddy, was the only person to die in a plane crash in Hawaii in 2013? Everyone else survived. Not only is that the case, but there were three figures, young black men, all identified as homosexual, from Reverend Wright's church who died under mysterious circumstances and who may very well have engaged in gay sex with Barack Obama. Shreve and Campbell are just two of the many mysterious deaths that tend to strike those who are close ties to powerful Democrat families like the Clintons and the Obamas. Whether you believe in the various online conspiracy theories that go around about these deaths or not, it can't be denied that they are very odd indeed. Now, let me offer a couple of alternative takes on what may be going on here. And I was on Scott Bennett's Global Great Awakening show last night, and he and I discussed, where Scott's a former Army Intel and PSYOPs officer, and where we've done collaborative research on other events like Las Vegas, for example. Scott has a very keen eye. He noticed, for example, that in the photograph of Stephen Paddock in his suite, that there's a handful of shell casings in relation to the body, but that the shell casings are on top of the blood, which, of course, would be preposterous if he'd been firing the weapon that produced the shell casing once he's dead. He's not going to be firing anymore, and therefore the shell casing ought to have been under the blood. Not only that, but Scott also noticed that some of the shell casings that were put down were for blanks and for CO2 cartridges for gas-propelled pellet guns. In other words, you got the prop master just throwing down a handful of shell casing to create a scene and not being aware of technical differences that could give the game away. Now, there are at least three reasons why I think this may have happened, and admittedly, this is all speculation. But we have Barack Obama being deeply involved in Pizzagate. And what you may not know is from WikiLeaks, among the revelations was an email about how Obama spent about $65,000 flying in pizza dogs from Chicago for a private party at the White House. Okay. Now, presume that meant, you know, pizza, like Pizza Hut pizza, hot dogs, like Coney Island. You can't get food into the White House from outside sources. It's not permissible to avoid, to circumvent the prospect of poisoning. So what would Obama be doing spending $65,000 of taxpayer money to fly pizza and dogs from Chicago for a private party to the White House? White House won't accept food from outside sources. That's the first point. Second, if this really were pizza pie and hot dogs, real hot dogs, like with mustard and relish, by the time you flew them from Chicago, they'd be inedible, even outside, for a party outside the White House. So that's ridiculous. Unless you know the language of pedo speak, according to which pizza stands for a girl, hot dog for a boy, cheese for a little girl, pasta for a little boy, that Barack Obama spent $65,000 buying little boys and little girls in from Chicago for a private party at the White House. It's disgusting, but there it is. You can find more by going to my blog at jameshfetzer.org and look for jimtheconspiracyguy.com or the 65 shows. And you'll find a very extensive, detailed report about Pizzagate. And it's just disgusting beyond words. So, would the chef have been aware of all of this? I think it's pretty tough to imagine he would not. Especially when you go further and understand that part of the whole Pizzagate phenomenon is actually consuming humans. I mean, we have some. I have a whole series there where you can see a cake that's made up to look like a woman, and by God, it looks like a real woman that they're carving up to serve. And the cake was all red, the color red. But if you can brace yourself, I also have an image there of what appears to be a headless man, and you can see where the head has been cut from the body. And it appears anatomically to be exactly what we would expect of a headless corpse. And another that appears to be a woman. And they're both just baked up, ready to consume. So, is it possible that their chef would have been aware that, say, the Obamas were having some rather exotic fare for some of their meals, and that, I don't know, maybe he was saying things he shouldn't say to the wrong people? Here's another theory. Roger Stone has predicted that the Democrats are going to nominate Michelle to be their presidential candidate. Frankly, I don't think that will fly, but I'm completely open to the prospect and even have encouraged it that they're going to make Gavin Newsom of California their presidential nominee, but Michelle their vice presidential. Well, how will Americans feel about the Democrats' vice presidential nominee if they know that Michelle Obama is actually a man, was born Michael LeVon Robinson, transferred from Oregon State to Princeton to assume the female persona and began calling herself Michelle Robinson, who has had breast implants? I mean, listen, this is a very, very weird family. Remember, even Joan Rivers blew the whistle when she was asked by a reporter, now that we have our first black president, do you think we'll have a first gay president? And she replied, we already have the first gay president with Obama. Let's just calm down. Let's just calm down. And we all know Michelle's. Hello? No, just call that phone number, or I'll have my producer reaching you at the break, Jeffrey. He's got your number. He'll call you. Yeah. Jeffrey Smith wanted to make sure we're connected. So, you know, a lot of people know about this. I've reported on it extensively. There's no doubt Michelle Obama is a man with a very unusual arrangement of features, because as you can see from many photographs, and including dancing on Ellen DeGeneres, Michelle has a package most women do not have. So I'm going to ask Mitchell to call Jeff now to make sure we get the right connection here. So could it be that Tariff was talking about Michelle being a man? I think it's possible, but unlikely. There's a third theory about what happened here that pins this on Michelle. Michelle, being gay, but having these unusual attributes of a woman, has been known to be very jealous about Barack, who appears to be extremely promiscuous. For those who may have missed the memo, Brock had a torrid affair with Rahm Emanuel in Chicago in the bathhouses there before he became president. And brought Rahm with him to the White House. Well, Michelle saw to that. She did not want this to happen.
The producer?
So she had Rahm fired. There was also a Reggie Love, whom Brock seemed to like a lot, calling him his body man. And apparently Michelle got rid of him too. So the third theory worthy of contemplation is that Brock was showing too much enthusiasm over the chef, and Michelle didn't like it. And I'm just telling you, you know, this is a sordid case because of its lurid aspects. It's going to make quite a few rounds. It's getting a lot of attention on the social media. And frankly, I think there is something to it. Now, the third story I want to report on is, if you check out my blog at jameshfetzer.org, Patrick J. McShay has a new article, Joe Biden, New World Order Crime Boss. Pretty damn good. So I encourage that. And when we return, I'll introduce Jeff Smith, and we'll talk about genetically modified food. Stand by. You don't want to miss this.
Hello.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, Jeffrey was connected with us on his cell, but wanted to switch to his landline. So he's calling in now, and as soon as we have him here, we'll move forward with his discussion about genetically modified food, which I expect to be quite sensational. Let me just say, regarding what Patrick McShay observes here, anyone with a pea-sized brain can see that we now live in a post-constitutional oligarchy controlled by a cabal of criminal globalists, Satanists, and communists who hate Americans, the Constitution, Christians, and white people. It's gotten so crazy that every time President Biden or his son has a new scandal about to be exposed, Donald Trump gets indicted again. Wow. Has he got that right? If there was ever a case that should be turned over to a special counsel, it is the Biden corruption and bribery scandal. There's already enough information that has been made public to convict both Joe and Hunter Biden of treason. Joe's denials of being involved in Hunter's deals have been refuted by other partners like Tony Bobulinski, along with Hunter's incriminating emails and texts. Let me see what we got here. Mitchell, did you see where Jeffrey wants to connect by his landline? Can you hear me? Mitchell, are you there? We're just going to have to wing it and see what happens here. I'm very troubled. I tried to call Mitchell myself to verify if we get the right arrangement with Jeffrey, but I was unable to reach him.
Hey, Jeff's number?
Yeah.
The 7877. I had him a minute ago. Did he drop?
Yeah, he dropped because he wants to come in on his landline. I gave you the number.
Okay.
It's a 415.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll bring him right in, Jim.
Thanks very much, Mitchell. So very good. There we have the solution. Former FBI Assistant Director of Intelligence Kevin Brock says there's enough evidence in this case to warrant a full-field criminal investigation into the Biden family's suspicious activities. And the U.S. attorney and lead investigator in the case.
This is Jeffrey.
Jeffrey, hey, I'm delighted to have you here, my friend. This is an expert on genetically modified food joining us now, Jeffrey Smith. Jeffrey, please.
Yes.
Lay it on.
Okay, then. You're giving me an open mic here, ready to summarize the 27 years of work that I've been doing around the world. I'm happy to take it. Thank you.
Absolutely. So, you go for it. Yes.
All right. So in 2000, Monsanto's patent in their herbicide Roundup was going to expire. So they found that glyphosate, which usually kills bacteria because it's an antibiotic, that there was a bacterium that was not dying in a chemical waste dump near their factory in the presence of glyphosate. So they figured, great, let's put it in the food supply. So they cut out the gene that allowed the bacterium to survive and put it into soybeans and corn and cotton and canola and later alfalfa and sugar beets so that farmers could spray their Roundup herbicide right on the, quote, Roundup-ready genetically engineered seeds they bought from Monsanto. But the farmers would have to sign a contract saying that they'd only use Monsanto's version of the glyphosate-based herbicide because starting in 2000, the market was flooded with cheap knockoffs from China and elsewhere, but not for those that planted the Roundup Ready seeds because they had to buy Monsanto's Roundup. Now, what happened is they put this genetically engineered crop onto the market by forcing the gene into the DNA of the soybean, and that process creates massive collateral damage in the DNA, which could increase allergens or toxins or carcinogens, change the nutrition. And just before they planted it widely in the United States, I attended a lecture by a genetic engineer who blew the whistle. He said, there's no way that Monsanto or anyone could ever safely create and release a genetically engineered food at this point in our understanding of science, because there's no way they can defend against the side effects. Furthermore, once you put it outside, it will cross-pollinate and survive and continue to be part of nature's gene pool for as long as that species exists. So we were about to release a potentially dangerous food that we put, be put in everyone's diet, because soy and corn are practically omnipresent, and it would be irreversible in the environment. So I decided to help out a little in 1996, 27 years ago, and I've written a couple of books and made 5 movies and traveled to 45 countries and trained 1,500 speakers and organized lots of activism and activists. And now I can tell you that without a doubt, genetically modified foods and the Roundup sprayed on most of them are some of the most dangerous things that we have in our lives, in our environment, and in our diet. We have found relationships between GMOs and Roundup with more than 40 different diseases. And not just relationships, but very serious close correlations and plausible causative pathways and animal feeding studies and experience among pediatricians and veterinarians and thousands of people who report to us the changes, in fact, the benefits when they switch to an organic diet, which does not allow either GMOs or Roundup to be used. So the takeaway from what we're going to do, there's like 3 takeaways. The first takeaway is eat organic and watch what happens. In fact, take notes. Write down all of your symptoms in a spreadsheet and rate them every day, 1 to 10. And at the top of that column for that day, what percentage of organic food you've eaten. And because so many people, and more than 50% of our 3,256 people surveyed reported getting better from mood problems like anxiety and depression, indicate your mood level. And because 60% reported getting better with more energy and about 50-something with less brain fog, put your energy level. And about 60% said they gained, they were able to lose the extra weight. So put your weight there as well and watch what happens when you switch to an organic diet. And we know, like in the film that I did with Amy Hart called Secret Ingredients, we had autistic kids no longer on the spectrum. People lost weight, brain fog, allergies, reactions to cancer treatments, skin conditions like eczema and other things. And these were described by the physicians in the film as typical responses, not one-offs, but typical responses in their patients who they prescribed non-GMO diets to. And the scientists in the film described the reasons why. And we can go into that. We can spend some time understanding the science, but there's another thing that's happening now. So we've compiled all those dangers. I've spoken in more than 2 dozen medical conferences. I've inspired tens of thousands of practitioners to prescribe non-GMO and organic diets, and they report back amazing recoveries, as also with veterinarians for pets as well as livestock. But now there's a new form of genetic engineering called gene editing, part of the suite of things we call GMO 2.0. And gene editing causes massive collateral damage in the DNA, just like the traditional version of genetic engineering when you would use a gene gun and blast genes into a plate of cells, or you would use bacteria to infect the cells. Now, with gene editing, you have a molecular scissors, you have a target where to cut, and you hope that when the cellular repair mechanism in the cell puts it together, it does what you want and doesn't create more allergies or toxins, etc. But it turns out that it does create massive collateral damage, and the journal Nature described it as chromosomal mayhem. But that did not stop the biotech industry from mounting a multi-million dollar disinformation campaign, convincing government after government to deregulate, to turn a blind eye to genetic engineering made from gene editing, under the false claim that it is safe and predictable. And they have allowed now gene-edited foods on the U.S. market and around the world, and soon will be flooded with these gene-edited GMOs with no oversight, no regulation, no labeling in this country and around the world. And the most common result of gene editing and genetic engineering as a whole is surprise side effects. Now, it doesn't stop there with just a contamination and bastardization of our food supply. Because gene editing is now so cheap, you can actually buy a CRISPR gene editing kit for less than $2,000. And they're being purchased and used now in high schools, also by home hobbyists. Now, if you imagine that we now have the capacity to distribute this in the millions around the world, giving the keys to the kingdoms, the genetic integrity of nature, to anyone with $2,000 or someone in high school, and the price is going to go down, we have the capacity to incrementally introduce new GMOs into the environment that can never be recalled, and ultimately replacing nature so that future generations do not, like we did, inherit the products of the billions of years of evolution, but instead inherit a hybrid of natural and man-made, whose number one most common result is surprise side effects. So we're at a situation now in human civilization where we can easily and accidentally redirect the streams of evolution for all time, destroy biological evolution as we know it. We need to make some collective decisions, regulations, laws, and treaties. And the single most important target area is microorganisms. It doesn't take a lot of imagination to figure that you can genetically engineer a microbe that can cause an infectious disease around the world. However, with microbes collectively form microbial communities called microbiomes. The internal microbiome in our bodies is so important, it's like a second organ. In fact, we've outsourced maybe 90% of our daily metabolic and chemical activities to the microbes living inside us. We can get away with a measly 23,000 genes in our cells because we use the 3.5 million genes in the microbiome living inside us. It's involved with detoxification, nutrition, all sorts of things, in immune system. And it turns out that just slight changes in the microbiome lead to about 80% of the diseases that we have. Now, when you release genetically engineered microbes, as will be happening in every high school biology class, in the college biology labs, also by home hobbyists, so we'll be flooding the microbiome with genetically engineered versions that have not co-evolved with humans and created these beautiful synergistic relationships. They can not only interact and interfere with the functioning of these microbial communities, but they can swap genes, changing the nature of nature, planting their altered genes into hundreds or thousands of other microbes. And we know that microbes are like the Jedi army that works on our behalf. The algae in the oceans produce more than half the Earth's oxygen. The fungal networks shuttle nutrients between trees. The carbon gets drawn into the soil by soil microbes. And humans, and especially infants, determine their health for sometimes their entire lives by how well they've set up their microbiome, and we are interfering with them. So our Institute for Responsible Technology at responsibletechnology.org is spearheading a new global movement to protect the microbiome. And I encourage everyone to go to responsibletechnology.org. There's two short videos. One is called 7 Reasons Why Gene Editing is Dangerous and Unpredictable, just 6 minutes, animated, journey into the genome to see what really happens, not what the biotech lobbyists say. And another one that's just 16 minutes called Don't Let the Gene Out of the Bottle. And there you'll discover a genetically engineered microbe, which, had it been released as planned in the early 90s, it could have theoretically ended terrestrial plant life. Another could have theoretically altered weather patterns. And these are just 2 genetically engineered microbes that could have made catastrophes happen on Earth simply by doing what they were designed to do, but in more ecosystems. Imagine if we flood the environment with millions of varieties and they start swapping genes, ending up in all sorts of ecosystems, it could be a disaster. So this is an existential threat. So we've just journeyed from the food supply damaged by Monsanto originally, and now we're talking about an existential threat, all from this technology, which is one of the most powerful technologies ever on the planet, but it's not being handled responsibly. And I'm not against the use of the potential gene editing for fixing human genes that may be defective, as long as it doesn't change the gene pool of humans. I'm not against using genetic engineering for research, etc., or contained use. But to release GMOs into the environment, knowing what we now know, is irresponsible. So that's the summary.
I couldn't agree more, Jeff. I think you've outlined it very, very nicely. I'd like your opinion about what may have been a catastrophically wrong decision by the Supreme Court to allow the possibility of patenting or trademarking or copyrighted forms of life when they're genetically engineered. I mean, the court may have thought this was a reasonable thing to do, since, you know, if you have in conventional copywriting, if you have an original work but it's altered, it has a different character and is no longer subject to the same copyright protection as the original. But in this case, we're dealing with forms of life. I think that they ought to have been viewed as on the order of laws of physics, laws of nature, you know, like the laws of gravity. You cannot patent the laws of gravity. I mean, my God, imagine if that were possible. Every physical act would be subject to some kind of potential or a hypothetical charge under use of copyright constraints. I'd like your thoughts about the legal history here of genetic engineering modification in the law.
Excellent question. I rarely get asked that question. You know, I've been speaking for 27 years on this, and you know, you study things for decades, you read things every day, and you end up giving just like 0.5% of what you know, and it's usually the same thing. So thank you for that insightful question. It turns out that Clarence Thomas used to work for Monsanto and ended up writing the majority opinion, which he rarely does, in a case that was benefiting the use of GMOs. The earliest Supreme Court decision on GMOs, Chakrabarty, about a genetically engineered microbe, was contentious, and it went in favor of being able to patent life forms. So what's interesting is that the biotech industry, in order to get a patent, says that this is unique and unnatural and owned. And then to the American public or the people around the world say, this is natural, it's nothing new, look the other way, doesn't need to be labeled or studied. So it turns out it's the two-faced argument, but patenting turns out to be the driver here. For example, there's corn that naturally resists the corn borer, and the seed companies could have developed that and sold it all over. But instead, they genetically engineered a corn variety to kill off the corn borer because they could patent it. Now, it's interesting what they were willing to risk in order to make this patent. They took a soil bacterium called Bacillus thuringiensis, or BT for short, where you can just gather up BT, spores and bacteria, and put it on your own garden. You can spray BT on it. It'll kill caterpillars at times of infestation. But it also has a immune response in humans. So there, when it's used in farms by farm workers, they can get allergic reactions. When it was sprayed by plane for gypsy moth infestation in the Pacific Northwest, some had to go to the hospital. About 500 people reported problems. So it does affect us. But when it's sprayed on a garden carefully, it will decompose in the sun or wash off in the rain. We know that the BT toxin kills the insects by poking holes in their guts to kill them. So what did the biotech industry do? They took this gene that produces this BT toxin and put it into corn. They also put it into cotton and in South America into soybeans. And they encapsulate the protein that is produced by every cell at concentrations that are thousands of times higher than the spray. It's also designed to be more toxic. So then we end up eating corn that has the BT toxin. Now, they've taken this BT toxin and put it in a lab and put human cells next to it, and it poked holes in those human cells, which are the same type of holes that it uses to kill insects. So now we're creating insecticides that we grow and eat. And they did this because they could patent it. But now we know that the BT toxin is toxic to red blood cells. We know that it was found in the bloodstream of 93% of the pregnant women tested in Canada and 80% of their unborn fetuses. And what's interesting is, how do we think that it got into the blood? Well, maybe it got in through the holes that were poked in the cells of the one cell thick lining of our digestive tract. Or maybe it had Roundup on it also, because it was not only a BT corn, but it was also a Roundup Ready corn. And Roundup separates the cells in the gut, causing leaky gut between cells. So it somehow gets into the bloodstream where it might wreak havoc, but then it should be washed out. If it should be washed out, why did 93% of the pregnant women tested in Canada have the BT toxin in their blood? They must have been consuming it regularly in some form, according to the researchers. But in Canada, most of the corn that's consumed is already broken down into corn syrup and corn sweeteners and things like that that don't have the toxin. It's not like Latin America where they use corn tortillas every day. So the researchers in this peer-reviewed article suggested that maybe the source of this large amount of BT toxin, enough so that 90% of the people tested had it, was from the milk and meat of animals, because they're fed the BT corn and the BT cotton as part of their diet, the cotton cake, the seeds. But there's another plausible explanation. In the only human feeding study ever conducted on a commercialized GMO, it was a single meal, by the way. There's very few studies that are meaningful, and those show significant damage. They found that the gene that produces the Roundup Ready effect in BT in crops, in soy in this case, actually transferred into the DNA of the bacteria living inside our intestines. So it becomes colonized inside us. Now, this was funded by the pro-GMO UK government, and as soon as they discovered that the Roundup Ready genes were transferring into human gut bacteria, maybe altering their function, they lifted the funding and no one investigated further. So the question is, what happens if you eat a corn chip? And the corn chip is designed to produce a toxin in every cell, and it's produced from a bacterial gene. Imagine if that bacterial gene from the corn chip transferred into the DNA of the bacteria living inside our intestines, and bacteria swap genes regularly. And imagine if it continued to function. That means we might turn our intestinal flora into living pesticide factories, And that provides another plausible explanation why 93% of the pregnant women tested in Canada had BT toxin in their blood, because they were producing it possibly in their own guts. And here we end up with a very plausible, scientifically defensible argument that was completely ignored. And it's one of many arguments that were overlooked by political and economic influence. It's interesting to note that the person in charge of FDA policy for GMOs, Michael Taylor, was Monsanto's former outside attorney. He said no GMO testing is necessary, no labeling is necessary, we see no difference, and therefore it can just go on the market. And then he became Monsanto's vice president. And years later, documents made public from a lawsuit show that it was all fraud, that the FDA scientists said, no, GMOs are very different, they're potentially dangerous, they need to be tested, and all that was ignored.
Jeff, all this is just staggering, and I've been very, very worried, too, that there are other threats where they're putting, for example, it appears to me, the vax into lettuce and other consumables, possibly meat, so that those of us who have had the wisdom to refuse to take the, let's call it the death vax, are not going to be able to escape its reach anyhow, because they're going to put it in food that we must consume if we continue to live. I mean, address any aspect of this that you think is reasonable.
Great.
Jeff, we'll be right back. We're right at the break, and I'm delighted to have you here. You're quite a powerhouse. I'm delighted. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence. At the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution. Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, I'm very impressed by Jeff Smith. He's obviously a master in knowledge about genetic modification, the science from A to Z. So, Jeff, I was asking about whether there's an attempt to modify, you know, common vegetables like lettuce or meat and poultry with a vax so that those of us who have had the wisdom to refuse to take it are going to find it. We're nevertheless going to be exposed to it. It's going to be in our system by virtue of polluting ordinary food that everyone consumes. I'm very distraught over this prospect, not to mention the others you've been delineating with such clarity.
You know, it's interesting about the contamination factor. I have been tracking GMO contamination for years. And there's one story that comes to mind, and I'll address the vaccines and lettuce in just a moment. They genetically engineered corn to produce a vaccine for pig diarrhea. And they grew it outdoors in western Iowa. Now, this is one of the classic stupidities of regulators to allow corn, which has a pharmaceutical in it, to be grown outdoors. First of all, corn pollen can travel. It usually stays viable for 1 to 2 hours. It can theoretically stay viable for up to 24 hours. With certain high wind conditions, that means it can be traveling up to 500 miles, but usually a mile or two is common. So now all over western Iowa, there's other corn fields that can be pollinated by the pharmaceutical corn. You know those tassels on corn? Well, pollen lands on the tassels and can pollinate individual kernels. So sometimes 2 miles away from blue corn fields, you can find corn that has one or two kernels that are blue because of airborne pollen. So they took pharmaceutical corn, engineered in their genes to produce vaccine for pig diarrhea and put it outside, which is phenomenally, as I say, stupid. Now, inspectors happened to be driving past this field the next year where they planted soybeans, but they saw some corn stubble peering up through the soybeans from the previous season. So that corn stubble, those stalks, were corn that was genetically engineered to produce vaccines. And when they went, that were not supposed to allow any of last year's volunteer corn to grow, and when they went back to deal with it, it had already been harvested and sent to a silo with massive amounts of soybeans. And then they had to report that because somewhere in that silo of soybeans, 250,000 pounds, I think, was corn that was genetically engineered to produce vaccines. And so they sequestered it. It became national news. Greenpeace put up a flag, a big banner saying, "Your food on drugs." And they ended up saying, okay, we'll make sure this gets fed to animals and not humans. This is an example of so many hundreds, thousands of examples of contamination, because that's the nature of nature. I used to work as the VP of marketing at GMO Detection Laboratory in the 90s, and we would test for contamination because that was a common result, especially among corn. Not as much with soy, but with corn, and more so with canola. Canola can cross-contaminate brassicas like Brussels sprouts and broccoli because it's the same family. And there's countless examples. So when I read 2 years ago, I think it was UC Riverside in California, a grant was given to researchers to genetically engineer the COVID vaccine into lettuce. I wrote a letter saying it was a terrible idea because decades show that there's no reasonable level of security that we can count on. Papayas grown in a field in Thailand were allegedly stolen, and same thing with genetically engineered papaya in Hawaii. A university was giving out natural tomato seeds for more than a year before they realized it was actually accidentally genetically engineered. A similar thing with genetically engineered flax and rice and wheat. So products that were supposed to be contained have consistently ended up in other locations and the food supply. At the place that I was working at, I was the second to learn that Starlink corn, not approved for human consumption, but allowed by stupid regulations by the EPA to be planted for animal feed, ended up contaminating U.S. food. It was a $1 billion recall. 315 products were subject to recall. The importers of corn in Asia and Europe closed their doors to U.S. corn when this was discovered and reported by the NGO that had asked us to do the research. So we have decades of examples, and yet they're allowing a vaccine to be engineered into lettuce. Now, early on, years ago, I talked to a farmer named Jerry in Iowa, and he was finding that the corn that was being fed to his cows and pigs were causing them to be sterile. And they could not get pregnant, and he tested and found high levels of a particular mycotoxin and whatnot. But we also found out that there was spermicide being produced in corn nearby, that they wanted to turn, because they knew the genetics of corn. They said, it's easy to grow. We can just insert genes to produce a spermicide so that the corn becomes something to help people or animals prevent getting pregnant. Well, it's possible that that actually contaminated Jerry's corn. There's also a situation where in Baylor University, there were some mice that weren't getting pregnant. And when they were being put on this corn husks or corn bed for their cages, and that was sourced in Iowa near this spermicidal corn. So that might have been another example of a contamination. So I'm with you about doing any kind of production of medicines or vaccines in food, because it's so easy to make mistakes. And I give you another example where people can just go and pull things out of an experimental field and eat it. Animals, too. In fact, we have evidence that the deer and livestock living near some of the experimental cornfields ended up with terrible birth defects and health issues. Fortunately, we also know that many animals, when given a choice, refuse to eat the GMO feed if the non-GMO is available. And we've seen that in pigs, cows, elk, deer, raccoons, rats, mice, dogs, water buffalo, and chickens, where when given a choice, they often, and this has been documented by scientists, reporters, video, etc., will choose the non-GMO. So it's our job to get humans up to the level of animals. Sounds like you may be taking a break, James, so I'll just keep talking.
No, Jeff, I like everything you're saying. Let me ask, isn't it horrendous that they would feed the animals foods that are bad for humans when humans are going to consume those animals? I mean, isn't that just creating a loop that's going to definitely adversely affect the human species?
There was a former director of the FDA Center for Veterinary Medicine, Gerald Geist, and he wrote in his opinion about the regulation of GMOs, which hadn't been decided yet, that there is unique risks associated with consuming foods from milk and meat from genetically engineered animals. And one of the things that is possible is something called bioaccumulation. So just suppose there's a toxin in one bite of food that's very small, but then it gets deposited in the tissue. And then you have another bite, and it keeps being added. And it bioaccumulates so that anyone that eats the meat, or if it bioaccumulates into the milk, gets a much bigger dose. There was a study showing that animals that were raised on, I think it was fish that were raised on genetically engineered feed had changes. It wasn't followed up on, but it showed changes. We've seen changes even in the milk of dairy cows that are fed genetically engineered soy. That was in the first study that was published by Monsanto's people claiming that there was no difference, even though when you looked at the data, there was dramatic differences and potentially catastrophic dangers that they hid from publication that was later recovered from the archives of the Journal of Nutrition. So it turns out that you're absolutely right. We feed animals the GMOs and things happen to them. I'll give you an example. Roundup, or glyphosate, its chief poison, was originally patented as a descaler to clean the walls of boilers and pipes in factories. And that's because it grabs onto minerals and doesn't let go. So it chelates them out of the system. Now, when you spray Roundup on a crop, it blocks the ability of the crop to use those minerals. And it blocks the ability to transport the minerals. So you end up with mineral-deficient, very sickly crops. It also promotes soil-borne pathogens, which kill these now sick plants without the access to the minerals. So now you have mineral-deficient plants that are being eaten by humans. Now we feed the livestock. What do we feed them? The Roundup Ready soy, corn, cotton, canola, sugar beets, and alfalfa, all mineral deficient. And we feed them Roundup residues, which take any existing, or not any, but some of the existing minerals in their bodies and becomes grabbed and unusable, grabbed by the glyphosate molecule. So now we have mineral deficient animals, and that has resulted in significant disease and reproductive disorders. In fact, I know a veterinarian that will send the organs of stillborn calves and find there's like no detectable manganese. Even though there's plenty of manganese in the grass around, it was all chelated by glyphosate. So now we eat the mineral deficient animals and the mineral deficient GMOs, along with residues of Roundup, which takes additional minerals offline. Minerals are like the key in the ignition to all of these metabolic pathways. It's like imagine hiring a bunch of workers and they're sitting around waiting for the foreman to show up. Unless there's that particular triggering mineral, nothing happens. And so when we are depleted of minerals, then a lot of things can break down. We know that in the presence of glyphosate, our detoxification pathways are impaired. That means all of these other toxins that would normally be ushered out by the liver or other pathways can be hanging around and doing damage. So we end up then causing a problem with our minerals, but also there's the possibility of other toxins accumulating in the milk and meat from the animals that are fed GMOs, And unfortunately, we don't have a lot of research on that because the FDA's Michael Taylor, Monsanto's former attorney, was in charge of policy and said no testing was necessary. We can just treat GMOs as safe if the company says they're safe. And I remember reading from a FDA microbiologist, Pribble, Dr. Pribble, who was angry at the proposed document that he was reading authored by Michael Taylor. And Lewis Pribble said, what's going to happen is the companies are not going to do the studies that they would normally do because they're not required, and that over time there'd be a sense of, well, it's been done 1,000 times before, so it must be safe. Both of those predictions turned out to be true. The amount of research, very little. The amount of confidence, it's supported by this sense that it's safe, the lies that it's safe. But people like me and others around the world have been gathering the data and show that it may be one of the most dangerous things that we're doing to our body. In fact, I have a list of charts showing all of these diseases rising in parallel with the increased use of GMOs and Roundup. And we're talking about inflammatory bowel disease, various cancers, hypertension, et cetera, autism. It goes on.
Jeff, with your phenomenal knowledge of these matters and your clear grasp of evolution, you must have been dumbfounded by the COVID pandemic and the vax and the horrors that have ensued therefrom. I mean, you seem to me someone who ought to be testifying before congressional committees. I wonder if you've ever had such an opportunity, because you clearly are qualified to do just that. But mustn't it have horrified you when you were watching what was going on with the pandemic and the vax before your very eyes? Because you'd seen comparable phenomena taking place in the animal and plant kingdom.
I know that what you said in the beginning was that I do know a lot about my subject, and it's true. But I also find that it's important, and I made this decision a long time ago because people wanted me to come on about everything. And I said, you know, I've spent years and years studying the GMO dangers. I interviewed 30 scientists and doctors for my second book, Genetic Roulette. I'm constantly pouring through studies and reports on my area. But I also don't want to pretend that I'm an expert on anything else, and I want to make sure that I maintain my scientific integrity, not as a scientist, let's say a citizen scientist or a reporter or a translator of scientists. And so I don't have comments that I share publicly about areas outside my expertise, because I have all the data to support exactly what I'm talking about. But in terms of vaccines in general, I can tell you that they have found glyphosate in vaccines, which is a horrible thought, going straight into the bloodstream. And I'm not talking about the COVID vaccines. I'm talking about the other vaccines, because in the process of creating them, they use animal products, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm also aware, and this is an interesting aspect that relates to my world, there's a big question now, and some people think it's answered and some people don't, of whether the virus came out of a laboratory. But no one is questioning now the fact that it could have. We know that the H5N1 avian flu was enhanced in ways that could have made the COVID pandemic a walk in the park, with a death rate of 50% with this one particular H5N1. And that was enhanced in a laboratory to be airborne. So when we realize what's happening in these gain of function research labs, and there's not a lot of them, and the concept is that if they actually accidentally release something, it could be a cataclysm. But a USA Today reporter has already compiled over 1,000 accidents and mistakes made at supposedly biosecure labs. Even the CDC's avian flu lab and their anthrax lab had to be closed because of mistakes. So even the highest biosecurity labs in the world are not fully secure. So how can we justify allowing scientists to enhance pathogens that are called potential pandemic pathogens, meaning if they were released, it might create a pandemic. They create an excuse saying, well, when we do this, it gives us the ability to basically surveil the environment to see if there's any mutations like the ones we have found. That has never worked. It's never come out to pass. It's a myth at this point. And then maybe we can make vaccines to prevent in advance, but it turns out there's mutations that go on, so whatever they create in the lab may have nothing to do with what happens in nature. And many competent, independent scientists say we can get virtually everything we need without having to risk humanity with these gain-of-function experiments. So a lot of scientists and citizens are coming together saying we must stop this crazy, insane research. But I want to add something to that dialogue, James. And that is, everyone can envision that an infectious agent that's genetically engineered should not be enhanced that might create pandemics. But in the film, Don't Let the Gene Out of the Bottle, we talk about a soil microbe, a basic, simple soil microbe, Klebsiella plantigrade. It's on the root structure of every terrestrial plant in the world. And some well-meaning scientists genetically engineered it to turn plant matter into alcohol. And their idea, which sounded good on paper, was to distribute it to farmers who normally burn their crop stubble after harvest and instead could rake it up, put it into barrels with this genetically engineered bacteria, and then within about 2 weeks, it turns it to alcohol, which they could run their tractors with or even sell for extra income. And then they could take the nutrient-rich sludge at the bottom and spread it on their fields. Well, a friend of mine, Dr. Elaine Ingham, who's one of the top soil biologists in the world, happened to be at Oregon State University and happened to have a graduate student wanting to get his PhD who wanted to do research on a genetically engineered microbe and got permission from this group to take some of this genetically engineered Klebsiella plantigrade and do a test on it. So he planted it, he mixed it with soil and planted wheat seeds along with a couple of controls. And one Saturday morning, walked into his lab and was shocked, called up my friend Elaine and said, I must have made a mistake. It's terrible. The plants are dead. She said, just a minute, let's sort through. It turns out only the plants that had been planted in the soil that had been mixed with the genetically engineered bacteria had died. It actually looked like slime on the surface of these little wheat seeds had turned into slime. They had turned to alcohol. Now, 2 weeks after this was the date at which the scientists who created this GMO were going to release it into the environment to see how far it could spread. And after Elaine Ingham talked at the UN and talked about this potential tragedy, she was approached by people at the EPA, whistleblowers, who said, we did a study that was secret and never acknowledged, where we found out just how far genetically engineered bacteria can travel. We planted some in a field in Arkansas. It traveled 11 miles in all directions the first year, about 11 the next year, but then it continued. The EPA stopped funding the study, but we continued to gather the evidence, and now it's found everywhere on Earth. Now, put that together, and I ask Elaine in this short video, 16 minutes, what would have happened if they had released the genetically engineered bacteria that turns plant matter into alcohol, that in its natural state exists on every root structure of every plant on the planet? And she said the worst case scenario, it could have ended terrestrial plant life. Ended terrestrial plant life. Now think about that compared to a pandemic. It's a cataclysm, not just a catastrophe, a cataclysm. Now, there's a lot of ifs there. Maybe we could have stopped it. Maybe it wouldn't have gotten a survival advantage. Maybe it would have mutated out of existence. Who knows? But there is a theoretical possibility sufficient enough to say, let's not just stop gain of function research in potentially pandemic pathogens. In fact, we should stop the release of all genetically engineered microbes, because even the common microbes in our guts, the common microbes in soil, in oceans, if they change their nature, either direct from genetically engineering those microbes or from something called horizontal gene transfer, where you genetically engineer one bacterium and then you release a bunch, and now that change is in a dozen or a hundred of other types of bacteria or even in algae or fungi, doing things you could never anticipate. So the lesson that I want to share from the pandemic is that we are now playing with the future in a way that it's a gamble that we should never take. So all of those who are listening that are demanding an end to gain of function, expand the demand so that there's no release of genetically engineered microbes. Now, there are three ways that these microbes primarily are being flooded into our biosphere. The first is just academic experiments. We talked about this before. High school science classes, home hobbyists, just creating stuff, licking their fingers, touching something, flushing it down the toilet. It's in the environment. The second are companies like Bayer, which bought Monsanto, joining up with Ginkgo Bioworks and producing soil bacteria that produces, for example, nitrogen-fixing bacteria to help farmers grow their plants. So they're being released in the quadrillion. And then there's these factories that use synthetic biology to produce targeted medicines and CBD.
Jeff, we're up against the break. I'd like you to continue. Would you be open to taking calls during the
Absolutely.
Last segment?
Absolutely, Jeff.
Excellent. Be right back with Jeff Smith.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes. That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building. Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, I must say how impressed I am with my guest today. He's a phenomenon. He has such a mastery of the science, the technology, all the issues related to genetic modification of food and the hazards they represent. I want to open the lines, therefore, for this opportunity to speak with a true expert, 540-352-4452. If you've ever worried about your food, where it's coming from, how it's being affected, how alteration can all not only make changes in your body, but potentially put at risk humanity, I mean, this is very serious stuff, and I want you to take full advantage. And I know, Jeff, in fact, there have been complaints by farmers in Mexico where they had, I don't know how many dozens of kinds of corn, but that Monsanto allowed some of its genetically modified corn there to blow into various fields, and it's become ubiquitous. Now farmers are being charged for raising corn because it's the Monsanto genetic variation, which they never ordered, they didn't want. And yet they're being compelled to pay for. I mean, it is outrageous. This is a kind of vulture capitalism affecting humanity in a way that is threatening to our very existence. Your thoughts?
Well, you're absolutely right about the farmers. And I wasn't aware of how many in Mexico that this was happening to, but it certainly is in the United States and Canada. And my friends at the Center for Food Safety had a book out where they documented hundreds of farmers who had been threatened or sued by Monsanto for allegedly planting their patented seed without paying the patent price. But sometimes it was just blowing over from neighbors' fields or flying off of trucks nearby. My friend Percy Smicer, who died a couple of years ago, but he was famous because he never planted Monsanto's genetically engineered canola, but because he was next to fields that did, and trucks would pass the two-mile-long road by his farm and wind would blow these tiny seeds there. He was contaminated and got sued by Monsanto for replanting the same seeds that he had replanted year after year because he's a seed saver and a seed developer. So he was just doing what he was doing for decades, and Monsanto sued him and won. It went up to the Supreme Court, and he still lost. Then the Supreme Court said, it doesn't matter how the genetically engineered patented seeds got onto Percy's field, whether it was on purpose or by accident, and that this is according to the law. And they even said, you know, maybe the law is not appropriate, but if we're going to honor the law, then Percy is liable. And fortunately, they didn't have to, there was no economic loss by Monsanto, so they didn't charge Percy anything. He just spent hundreds of thousands in lawsuits for months and years. But he ended up speaking about his issue and traveled all over the planet. He was one of the few people that traveled more than I do in talking about GMOs. He had been to about 150 countries and spoken most of them. And his story was like a tearjerker. And it was the way that Monsanto and their minions would beat up on scientists, of course, but also on farmers to create poster children. Like, this is going to happen to you if you don't toe the line. And they'd actually even use that sentence with other farmers and the scientists that were threatened and forced out and fired. They also became poster children, and I wrote about them, scientists that discovered problems with GMOs and became the biotech pariah and then were forced out by sometimes political influence that according to one story, Monsanto called Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton called the Prime Minister Tony Blair. Tony Blair called the director of the Rout Institute. That director fired Arpad Pusztai after 35 years and silenced him with threats of a lawsuit because he discovered that the generic process of genetic engineering causes massive damage in rats that were raised on supposedly healthy GM foods. So I document all this. So yeah, it's a pretty interesting full court press that Monsanto and others have done around the world. And I've seen that as I traveled to these 45 countries and heard about their capturing of different politicians and ministries and regulators. And there's still a lively group of people trying to fight. And now that there's gene editing on board with the ease of creating GMOs that have never been there before, we have a more important task.
Jeff, have you been invited to testify before Congress? It seems to me you're preeminently qualified, and the issues you're addressing are so central and important to the quality of life, or even the continued existence of humans in the United States subjected to all these technological innovations that jack up the profit margins of these humongous corporations. I mean, you seem to me to be a perfect guy to have in as an expert to testify before Congress. But would I be correct to infer it has not come to pass?
Well, so far, Congress and the various administrations, both Democrat and Republican, since the Reagan era have been pro-GMO. And getting a serious congressional hearing has not really been the case in the United States. I have testified at state legislators. I've testified around the world. So, I was in Taiwan, and they created a whole hearing because I was there and summoned their version of the FDA and USDA. And at the end, they said, based on your testimony and your book, Mr. Smith, we realize that we do not have the appropriate laws in place to regulate this technology, and we need to fix it. Soon after, the one thing they did was ban the use of genetically engineered foods in schools, so kids wouldn't be exposed. I've testified in New Zealand and Wales and Australia, all these different groups. I spoke at a meeting at the EU Parliament, side events at UN conferences. And it's interesting, when I travel, there's some places where Monsanto is already dominated, and they don't want me there. So when I was traveling around Australia, they were going to decide whether to deregulate and allow genetically engineered canola. And I knew completely, absolutely for sure that it was a dumb idea, not only for health, but also for economics, that they would lose some of their markets in Japan. They'd lose their non-GMO premium over Canada, which introduced canola and was enjoying a premium until they introduced GMO canola. And so when I traveled in Australia, I was invited to speak to the agriculture ministers of several of their states, but not of the two states that had already decided in advance that they were going to allow this. They refused to meet with me. 3 weeks later, they did allow it. And just as we had predicted, it became an economic liability. They lost their premium. They lost some of their marketplace. It was contaminating. It was destroying the lives, in some cases, of the livelihood of organic farmers. Everything we had predicted came to pass. But it turns out that they had created a situation where farm groups in these two states would enjoy sharing the royalties of the GMO canola. So the farm groups that normally would resist it, now they're getting paid to support it and to give out the talking points that were dictated to them by Monsanto. And that's an example of some of the ways they work. They've been caught red-handed bribing, rigging research. It's incredible how blatant they are, and yet they still function.
Jeff, it's just distressing beyond belief. Can you offer any advice to our audience what they can do to protect themselves from these hazards? I mean, you go and you buy an ordinary head of lettuce, and then it turns out, unbeknownst to you, has been genetically modified with a vax. How can we possibly protect ourselves from this?
Well, I want to give two recommendations. And one is repeating the recommendation I gave at the beginning, and it's worth repeating now that the dangers are more in focus. And that is to protect yourself and your family. The easiest way is to eat organic. Now, organic can be expensive and sometimes hard to get. There's places that deliver it to your door or deliver it to drop points, as your standard has 3,000 drop points around the U.S., for example. But the question is, can you afford it? Well, in my research and in my interviews with families, it turns out very, very commonly these families end up getting sick less and spending less on their health care bill. One family of six was about $18,000 a year in health care. They switched to organic, and it went down by more than half, and then it went down by half again. And this is so put your medical budget partly into your food budget, but also put your philanthropy budget in there because you're also making a better world. And speaking of philanthropy, I want to make one more recommendation. At responsibletechnology.org, please not only join our newsletter to keep abreast of this information, but please make a donation. In fact, we just launched this week a self-care advocate program, so you get access to 20 years of curated information from our 20 years of existence for a pretty low cost, which supports us because it turns out it was a lot less expensive for the last 20 years when we were simply trying to protect the food supply by educating consumers to make healthier non-GMO choices. But now with the advent of gene editing, our choices in supermarkets will not stop the introduction of genetically engineered pets and grasses and algae and trees and mosquitoes. We need laws, and that's far more expensive, and it's also far more urgent, especially in the case of how microbiomes can be altered and how quickly microbes can spread. So we're actually struggling now as a nonprofit. We've been around for 20 years, and we're struggling and need support, not only to expand so that we have offices around the world so we can create international treaties, but at this point simply to survive because we've lost some of the funding that we've been getting regularly. And so I'd love to invite people who want to do something on a bigger scale to join our team as a donor. And we're a nonprofit, and there's all the benefits of that.
Jeff, I got to say, in terms of targets of agribusiness and the big pharma, you got to be right at the top of the list. I mean, you are dealing with so many serious truths they do not want the public to know. They've got to be going way out of their way to silence you, to derail your efforts, to keep you suppressed and away from public exposure. I'm all the more grateful to have the opportunity to feature you here on my show today. I'm just very, very much in your debt.
Well, thank you. And they certainly have tried to discredit me. I can tell you story after story. They created an entire website dedicated to try and discredit my second book because the second book was called Genetic Roulette, The Documented Health Risks of Genetically Engineered Foods. It had all the science in the world that was available, all the evidence, and it was completely overwhelming. So I invited them in the book to say, please challenge everything. Give me the information. I have pages on my website for all the 65 risks that I describe. I will paste, cut and paste whatever you send me into there, and we can have a global dialogue. There was nothing. But about 2 years later, when the book was really creating damage around the world, they put out their own website, misquoting the book and bringing out the same faulty scientific justifications for their technology that I had dismantled in the book. And so it was a complete falsification by scientists who claimed that they were independent. And because of the FOIA requests where they had to turn over their evidence, it turns out they were being paid by Monsanto. In fact, what I love is sometimes there's lawsuits where Discovery forces Monsanto to open its drawers and we get to read their memos. And there was a memo about me that was read in a trial against Monsanto claiming that their Roundup caused non-Hodgkin lymphoma in the plaintiff, and the plaintiff won. And it described this subject line, whack-a-mole. And it said, like, Jeffrey's at it again. He's written this article, and it talks about how GMOs are more dangerous to kids. And in it, I had quoted all these scientific organizations around the world, and they just they designed a way to try and silence it and reduce its capabilities. And the lawyer said, here's an advocate that's bringing up scientific evidence. And instead of looking at the evidence and taking it seriously and seeing if their products may cause damage, they mobilize their team to try and attack and discredit Mr. Smith. And it was an example of how they dealt with adverse findings. And I was happy that something about me made it into that trial. And the trial turned out to be a huge success. The jury awarded this couple $2 billion in punitive damages against Monsanto. The judge reduced it substantially, but they were so outraged at the way Monsanto had rigged their research, attacked scientists, got papers retracted by paying off editors. It was blatant and horrendous, and yet they still exist, purchased by Bayer, the aspirin company, and they're still functioning in the ways that are reprehensible.
Well, you know, I live in a small town south of Madison, Wisconsin, and every day I'm seeing appeals to individuals who may have been harmed by exposure to Roundup, where, you know, a firm is putting together a big suit, and I think this is only one of many. I mean, Roundup has been declared as a carcinogen, and of course, it's really a very powerful toxic agent. I mean, those who use Roundup like it because it works. It's very effective at killing weeds, for example. On the other hand, the risk to the environment and human life are substantial. Your thoughts about what's going on with this specific case of Roundup?
Yes. So I'm going to describe the things that Roundup and its chief poison glyphosate do to the human body. And for those that have been studying the human body, it's jaw-dropping what this list contains. Essentially, the foundations of health. All of them are interfered with or dismantled because of the actions of this single patented molecule. First, we mentioned that it deprives us of minerals, which can shut down all sorts of pathways. Second, it is an antibiotic. Studies show that it kills off the beneficial bacteria in our gut and not the nasty stuff. So it creates an imbalance which can lead to dozens of potential diseases and probably does every day. It creates leaky gut, gaps between the cells along our intestinal walls. This leaky gut was given credit for the source of all disease by a Harvard professor who wrote a peer-reviewed study saying that leaky gut is the source of all disease. It damages the hormonal balance, in particular aromatase, which determines the balance between testosterone and estrogen, the so-called male-female hormones. It also blocks the production of the precursors to serotonin and dopamine and melatonin. These feel-good chemicals and the ones that control our sleeping, when they go out, it could explain why there's such high correlation between the amount of Roundup in our food supply and things like insomnia, Parkinson's, also ADHD, suicide by overdose, all these different things related to the happy chemicals that are supposed to be flooding our brain that may be stopped because of what's happening by glyphosate, which blocks technically the shikimate pathway in the gut bacteria, which produces the aromatic amino acids, which produce 90% of the serotonin in the gut, and it's blocked by glyphosate. Glyphosate also suppresses digestion by suppressing digestive enzymes. It also damages the walls of our intestines, meaning those little fingers or microvilli, they can be a problem. It also damages or destroys mitochondria, the energy centers. There's a mitochondrial theory of cancer, a mitochondrial theory of aging, and glyphosate destroys mitochondria. And mitochondria gives the energy to the brain. 25% of our energy in the body is used in the brain. And without that, that could explain the overwhelming number of reports of brain fog as well as other neurodegenerative diseases. It also produces birth defects, and the birth defects are serious and can grow in future generations because they're inheritable. It's called epigenetics, and I interviewed Dr. Skinner, who injected glyphosate or Roundup into pregnant mice, and the grandchildren were seriously injured, and the great-grandchildren were even more worse off. 90% showed serious problems compared to controls because he found something in the sperm cells that was being transferred to next generation wreaking havoc. It also causes DNA mutations, oxidative stress, which leads to cancer. And we already talked about the World Health Organization declaring glyphosate a class 2A carcinogen. It also blocks intercellular communication, something called gap junctions. And I'm just getting started. So if you have any background in biology, medicine, functional medicine, I have just listed the kind of areas that the practitioners usually target if you have disease. Let's fix your microbiome. Let's close your leaky gut. Let's make sure you have enough minerals. Let's make sure you have enough serotonin, all these things. All of these turn out to be interfered with by glyphosate, which is why we can look at these long lists of charts showing the amount of Roundup increasing and all of these diseases increasing in parallel, including autism. Now, I want to add one thing that's really important for everyone that I forgot to mention. Glyphosate is not just sprayed on Roundup-ready GMO crops. It's also sprayed just before harvest on beans and grains to ripen them and kill the weeds for next growing season. So it's in high concentrations in oats, in wheat, in legumes like lentils and mung beans and chickpeas. So if you want to avoid Roundup, and you do want to avoid Roundup and the glyphosate residues, you can go to responsibletechnology.org and click on the database of glyphosate residues in your food. And you can find out which ones have been tested showing high levels and which ones are lower. Now, if you're eating organic, organic doesn't allow the use of glyphosate, but because glyphosate's in the rain, you're still going to get some level of contamination even among some organics, but the amount is way less. So we have been flooding our bodies with glyphosate starting in 1996 with the GMOs sprayed with Roundup, and then around 2006 as it was starting to be used to dry down these wheat and oats and beans. And so we have large amounts, and you can even check it in your urine, check it in your hair. And when you switch to organic, the amount goes down dramatically. And so many times people say how quickly they feel better. I remember interviewing a doctor at the American Academy of Environmental Medicine, where I had spoken for the previous 4 years, and they were giving me an award, and I brought a video camera, and I interviewed Dr. Emily Lindner. And she was the third person I interviewed, and the two other doctors said, yeah, people get worse when they're on GMOs and they get better when they're off. She said something to me that was astounding, and I was skeptical. She said, I put all of my patients on non-GMO diets, and they all get better. And I said, okay, what percentage? She said, I told you all. All right, 98%. I said, how many patients? She took about a minute to figure it out, doing the math, and then turned up and said, about 5,000. So I said, can I come to your practice and interview your patients on camera? She said, sure. So I did, as well as other people's practices, and it was astounding, all the different things that changed. And she said, you know, anxiety and depression in her practice can go away almost immediately. Asthma and allergies about 7 days, and then the digestive disorders may take a couple of months, and then you have to rebuild the system up to 2 years. So she had an experience. Then I talked to someone who had 9,000 patients on non-GMO and organic with tremendous results. Then I was talking to a pediatrician, Dr. Michelle Perro, who just after around 2000, the early 2000s, all of these kids started coming in with horrendous symptoms, complex, difficult to treat disorders. She happened to read my books and went, oh my God, I think this is what's happening. It's the GMOs and the Roundup. So she put her patients on an organic diet by saying to the family, I'm not just asking you to create organic food for your autistic son or your sick daughter. I want everyone to eat organic. And sure enough, the disorders became much easier or subsided altogether, but everyone else in the family started getting better. The daughter's ADHD cleared up. The father's kidney problems cleared up. The mother lost weight. And she wrote a book, What's Making Our Children Sick? So it's an absolute disaster what's going on. And now I'm going to ask the people listening that not only please consider changing your own diet, but think now about who you want to tell this to. You can share the link to this interview. You can share the link to Responsible Technology. The movie Secret Ingredients at secretingredientsfilm.com is the single most convincing 80 minutes that you'll ever see, because it has people that actually made the change, doctors describing in their patients that it's the same thing and scientists saying why. But please share with me, to some degree, this mission to share this message of health. Because the biotech industry, with its enforcement wing in Washington, has decimated the health of our food supply. We're not going to rely on them, as all of your listeners know, to fix the situation. It's up to us. It's been a real pleasure to be on your show, James. Thank you so much for having me.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their